Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. Ryan Thomas sitting there at the controls, Grace at the phones. And Ryan, you picked a good day to come to work.
Hey. Every day is a good day to come to work with you.
Since I'm your boss, I can understand why that was the right answer. But no, today we're going to talk with an author that I was just trying to think. I'm thinking that I have read just about everything of today's guest. I'm hoping so.
And that's impressive because he's written like 86 books.
No,
right?
He said 25. There's some authors that, you know, if they write something, you want to read it. And Philip Yancey is one of those guys for me that I just love to read what he has to say. And I don't know if he's actually writing during the show today, but we're going to actually have him talk about what he's written recently. Philip Yancey joins us today. He serves as editor-at-large for Christianity Today magazine, and he's written some 25 books. More than a dozen of those have been Gold Medallion Award-winning books, and some that 15 million books in print. I mean, it's 35 languages. There's a great track record there. Some of the books maybe you've read: Disappointment with God, The Jesus I Never Knew, What's So Amazing About Grace, Prayer, Does It Make a Difference? By the way, we've got a couple of copies of Prayer, Does It Make a Difference? That we'll give away at the end of today's broadcast, which is a great piece. But one of the books that we want to talk about that goes back, you know, 30-plus years, Where Is God When It Hurts? It was one of the first that Philip wrote. And it sort of resurfaced again not long ago because Philip was invited to go to Newtown, Connecticut. And remember that shocking shooting there in Newtown and how that really rocked the community, obviously, and us as a nation.
Yeah.
And Philip was invited to go speak. You know, what do you say when you're invited to go speak in a situation like that? And out of that came a new little book. It's an e-book called The Question That Never Goes Away. And truly, that is the question. Where is God when it hurts? Philip Yancey, my guest today. Philip, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thank you very much. And actually, I was writing right before you called.
All right.
So, if we hang up, I'll pick up the computer again.
Okay, good. Well, I guess if you start writing during the show, then we know that maybe I should be more attentive or something. But anyway.
Yeah, if you hear those little clicks in the background, right?
There might be, you know, Ryan may say something profound that you need to write down. So,
absolutely.
So we give you permission for that. So, Philip, tell us a little bit. You went to speak to Newtown. I mean, you've written this book, which has raised the question that we still don't have answers to. But you were invited to go speak and just maybe set up that experience. And what I guess was curious to me as I read this new book, The Question Never Goes Away, that you discovered that there were thousands of people that were still hungering for that answer because they downloaded the online version of Where Is God When It Hurts. And what does that tell us about, you know, this issue and our world today?
Isn't that the truth? We can think back to the shock, as you referred to, that the whole nation felt. It was something like after September 11, after the Boston Marathon bombings, one of those moments that just pulls the whole nation together in grief, in confusion. And they're looking for answers. So I was invited to Newtown. It was 2 weeks after the shooting. The shooting was on the 14th of December, and then there was Christmas, and I went on the 28th, so exactly 2 weeks after the shooting. And I was invited to a church, which is pastored by a good friend of mine, Clive Calver, who had been the head of World Relief. And he said, in the old days, I had 20,000 people working for me around the world, and my job was to respond to disasters, and I did that. Suddenly, it's my own church, it's my own community, and we're just at a loss. Could you please come And as a person who's not directly connected, just try to bring us some perspective on the questions that we're asking. I called my publisher and said, you know, the first book I wrote, which is 35 years ago now, is a book called Where Is God When It Hurts? And that's a question that the folks at Newtown are wrestling with. Could you possibly make some books available for them? They said, sure, of course, no charge. We'll just ship. How many can they use? And they said about 2,000, so they provided 2,000 books. And then this was Zondervan Publishing. They came back later and said, we really want to do more. We want to make it available to anybody because the whole country is swept up in this. So we're going to make it available online as a download, that the whole book, free, absolutely free, for a two-week period. Well, I had some experience with e-books, and they don't usually sell very well, Neil.
Yeah.
And so after we got the results, I asked my wife, how many people do you think downloaded that book? And she said, she's trying to be nice to me. She said, oh, I don't know, 1,500? And then I asked my agent, who's in the business, how many people do you think downloaded that book? And she said, maybe 3,000? Actually, when the full results came in, more than 100,000 people took advantage of that download. Not a single ad was placed. That's the thing about the Internet. You never know how the word gets out, you know, why something goes viral and how that happens. But it just shows the hunger that people have in the midst of a tragedy like that. That question that never goes away. That's why I decided to write the book. And I thought back over our 2012. There were three places where I was called specifically to address that topic, where is God when it hurts? One of them was the first anniversary of the tsunami in Japan. My books are published over there, and they asked me to come, and I spent a week in the area that was affected by the earthquake and tsunami speaking on that topic. That was in March, and then in October, I went to Sarajevo. So Japan was this natural disaster, killed 20,000 people. Sarajevo was quite different. 10,000 people died there. But there it was human brutality, this awful siege where Serbs would sit up in the hills and just pick off civilians as they walked to get water or food or whatever, launched bombs, mortars every day falling on that town. And then finally, Newtown in December, all the same year, a much smaller scale tragedy, but more horrible in its own way. These little 6- and 7-year-old kids, their parents kiss them goodbye, put them on the school bus, and then this terrible scene of brutality with this crazed young man who with a gun just mowed them down. That was the question, and it's the question that never goes away. And as I thought back on my 2012, I thought, I need to write something further. What I've learned since. I've spoken many, many times on the topic, and I've been to places like Virginia Tech, Columbine, places where that question just surges to the forefront. Unfortunately, it's going to come back again. Terrorist acts happen. Natural tragedies happen. Even after I wrote the book, or as I was writing it, you know, the Boston Marathon happened, the Texas fertilizer plant exploded, the tornadoes in Oklahoma. It is a question that just haunts us. And as a Christian, as a writer, I have been put in those circumstances, and I feel like I need to express what I've learned from the Bible, what I've learned from wise people, what I've learned from people who are suffering themselves about what helps and what kind of comfort we can bring.
We'll talk as we go along about that, the help and comfort that we may find if we do looking in the right place. I was interested, as you talked about, Clive Calver inviting you to come as a pastor and, you know, for years working in relief and development with disasters. He said, we're at a loss. And that phrase just kind of, I think, all of us, I mean, that really sums up probably where most of us are at times like this, right? We really are at a loss, aren't we?
We are. But I have found that we do have something to say. I noticed that after a tragedy like that, September 11, Boston, Newtown, suddenly places like the New York Times, they search out rabbis and pastors and priests to comment. I had recently, on another writing assignment, been reading some of the new atheists, people like Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris and people like that. And I notice they're never called to comment. And I found, as I prepared what to say at Newtown, that my faith was actually affirmed. I mean, if one of the new atheists was honest and went to Newtown and spoke, what would he have to say? He would say, well, what do you expect? This universe is just a random occurrence, and there's no goodness, there's no God, and bad things happen. Get over it. You know, it sounds kind of cruel, but really that is consistent to what they believe, that there is no loving God at the center of things. We Christians have a word of comfort. I could stand before those parents and say, your six-year-old daughter, your seven-year-old son, their lives did not end today. You can be reunited with them someday. And the grief that you feel, the pain that you feel, the sorrow that you feel is just a little glimpse of what God feels. God is grieved over this planet. But God has the ability to do something about it. And he's promised that he will restore this planet. We Christians are part of that restoration process. But that six-year-old life did not end. It moved into a different kind of life, into a different dimension. But that six-year-old, seven-year-old is loved by God, will live forever, and is now being comforted in the arms of a Savior who died for them. That's a message of hope. Not everybody's going to buy it. But when I consider the alternatives to what the new atheists could say, I found comfort as a Christian in being able to offer a message of hope.
It's interesting you talk about the atheists and sort of the agnostics on the sidelines that I guess, lob questions. And you quote Heather McDonald from the Slate magazine and talking about, you know, where's God's incentive to behave? He gets credit for the good things and no blame for the bad. I mean, that, you know, there is kind of sort of that prevailing attitude, I think, out there, isn't it? That, you know, God gets away with things. And obviously that's our wrong perspective of who God is.
Yes, and I, as a Christian, I would have to say the best clue we have to how God feels about something that goes on like that is by looking at Jesus. And you never see Jesus coming and giving some false comfort. You never see Jesus saying, well, they deserved it. Jesus always offers comfort and healing. If you want to know how God feels about something like that, just follow Jesus around. See how he responds to a widow who's just lost her only son, or even a Roman soldier whose servant fell ill. Jesus always responds with comfort and healing. And when he saw a sick person, he didn't lecture. He didn't philosophize. He healed them. When he saw a dead person, same thing. He resurrected them. And that's a bright clue to what we Christians believe will happen for the entire planet. And that I believe that we are called to represent that same note of comfort and healing in the world. We don't need to defend God. We don't, you know, people blame God. Well, I simply say God is as unhappy about what happened at Newtown as you did, as you are. And there are forces going on that God opposes. Jesus said, you should pray, and he gave us the Lord's Prayer. One of the things you should pray is that God's will be done, the Father's will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. That's not happening. But we Christians are here to demonstrate what that will is, that God's will is for healing and comfort and for a renewed and restored creation.
Talking today with Philip Yancey, who's a best-selling author. He serves as editor-at-large for Christianity Today magazine. He recently wrote a new book sort of based on the book that he wrote some 35 years ago, which is Where's God When It Hurts? The new one is called The Question That Never Goes Away. And we also want to talk a little bit about his book, Prayer. Does it make a difference? Because they are interlinked. In fact, we'll talk about the intersection of love, pain, and grief and some of those things, what we can learn from Philip Yancey in just a moment as we continue our discussion here on Connecting Faith. If you'd like to join the conversation as we talk, you know, pain, suffering, and some of those things, the question that never goes away, you're welcome to call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH or online myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith.
why did Jesus ask us to pray, and lead us not into temptation. God doesn't tempt us to sin, but we need to pray, lead us away, because there are many sins that look good to us, but will lead us to our doom. We need God's strength to resist the temptation. But God does test us as a means to refine and make us more like Him. Throughout the Bible, we read not to be surprised when we're going through trials and even to rejoice in them. But when I'm being tried, all I want to scream is, take this away. But I hear God say, you can pray for that, Debbie, but that's your will. The Message Bible translation reads, keep us safe from ourselves and the devil. Yes, I need to be kept safe from myself screaming, I don't want to go through this trial, God. I want out. I want my way. My prayer really needs to be, God, lead me not into temptation to have my own way, but may your will be done every day. For more encouragement, visit DebbieGriffith.com.
Past the hour, and we're talking today with best-selling author Philip Yancey. He's written some 25 books. He serves as editor-at-large for Christianity Today. Some of the books I hope you've read, The Jesus I Never Knew, or What's So Amazing About Grace, or Prayer Doesn't Make a Difference. We've got a few copies of that, actually, we'll give away here at the end of the hour if you want to join the conversation at 877-93-FAITH. One of his first books was called Where Is God When It Hurts? And that question keeps coming up, and so his latest is called The Question That Never Goes Away, which is addressing that very thing. Some lessons learned in the land of suffering, and as Philip mentioned, in 2012, he spoke in Where's God When It Hurts in three different places around the world scarred by catastrophe, in Japan and Sarajevo and then in Newtown, and of course, since that time, there's always something that comes. I was interested, Philip, Is it more troubling for us hard to explain if it's a natural disaster rather than brutality? I mean, does that make a difference to us when those things happen?
One thing I've learned, Neil, is that all suffering is suffering. And I know there are people who are listening right now who may be thinking, well, my pain is so small compared to what these folks went through in Newtown or the other places you've mentioned. It doesn't count. But it does count. We experience pain individually, and it just hurts. And I've learned it doesn't help to really rank pain. Certainly, there are different dimensions. The tsunami happened on a bright, clear day. People are just going about their business, and suddenly this huge wave, as much as 90 feet tall in places, would just sweep in and change life forever. Whole families are washed away. Whole villages are washed away. And there you find people just walking around kind of dazed. Sarajevo was a siege that went on for 4 years, and people just kind of got numbed and used to it. Death was present every day. And, yeah, it is a little different. Newtown, much smaller, but so much more intimate, where you've got little children who did nothing wrong. And then some parents were able to pick up their children at the end of the day. Some parents were not. They had 20 children died, of course. So you've got those parents who face that new reality. I remember one mother who said to me just last night, as we were saying grace around the table before the meal, I reached out my hand and realized it was just holding air. My daughter was gone. And that kind of grief will be with them forever. I'm sure they still have the photos and the videos. Some have kept the rooms just like they were. So they are different, and yet in one sense they're all alike, because it's a feeling that this world is not the way it should be, and this pain is so deep I don't know if I can bear it. That's common. And it's common, I'm sure, with people who, in my own life, you know, today, every day I check Caring Bridge and some people I care about deeply who are fighting cancer. How are they doing today? Is there anything new? Any hope in a seemingly hopeless situation? I just 5 minutes before you called, heard from a good friend of mine who just wrote a two-line note saying, my 19-year-old son was stabbed to death last night. And when that happens, it's as if nothing else in the world matters. You know, pain does it. It just concentrates grief, and it concentrates that feeling of, why did this happen, and can life go on? And it just it changes everything.
Now, you talked a little bit about C.S. Lewis. He wrote a lot about pain and sort of that intersection of love, pain, and grief, and, you know, what we can learn, or maybe more importantly, what we share with a wounded world, because all of us are, you know, wounded in some ways, aren't we?
Mm. Yes, that's true. And C.S. Lewis wrote two books about pain, actually. He wrote one beautiful philosophical book called The Problem of Pain, which is as good a summary of the explanation of why this world is the way it is that I found. Years later, he wrote another book. He got married late in life. He was in his 60s, I think, and had a lovely romance, and it turned out she had bone cancer, and for 3 years he lived with this woman and saw the woman he loved and who had brought such joy to his life wasting away. And after she died, he wrote another book called A Grief Observed. He didn't even publish it under his name. He used a pseudonym. And I always tell people, if you're going to read C.S. Lewis on pain, read both of those books. Because pain, the pain we experience, is not the kind of thing that you can solve mathematically, philosophically. You can't just read Lewis's book and say, oh, well, he solved that one. Lewis himself showed no. Understanding it, understanding the concepts behind it, that does not diminish the grief that you feel, the hurt that you feel. When he went through it with his own wife, it's as if he hadn't even written that book. He was just kind of lamenting and crying out to God all over again. He used a phrase called the megaphone of God. And I hesitate ever to disagree with C.S. Lewis because he's such a great mind. But I tremble a little bit when I hear that phrase, because when I hear that phrase, it sounds like a football coach on the sidelines with a bullhorn yelling out at his players, you know, do 50 push-ups or whatever. And what C.S. Lewis said was that God whispers to us, God speaks to us, but he shouts to us in our pain. And I would change that image. I don't think it's God with the megaphone saying, I'm going to get his attention. I'm going to make his little three-year-old suffer with leukemia. I truly believe that that is not the way this world works. And I think there's a lot of biblical evidence. And I don't think C.S. Lewis meant that. I wish he had used a phrase like, pain is the hearing aid that we have. When bad things happen, we have the opportunity, and truly it is an opportunity, to turn up that hearing aid and to cling to God, to listen to God, to listen to life in a different way than ever before. I don't think God is arranging these pains. I don't think God wakes up with a to-do list. Oh, these are the people that I'm going to make suffer today. We know that's not true because we see Jesus. Jesus didn't go around inflicting pain, he went around healing pain. So we know that's God's desire. And yet, even in the midst of those horrible things, good things can come. And that's the hope that we have as Christians. Paul was so clear about that in Romans 8. All the things that have happened to me in life, and they included prisons and beatings and shipwreck and snake bite and the things in Paul's biography. But he said all of these things can work together for our good. And I've learned that our focus when a tragedy happens, it's not the question why. I don't know the answer to why. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about it and studying it, researching it. I don't know. Why did a tornado hit this town in Oklahoma and not that town? I don't know. But I do know how God feels because I've got the face of Jesus, and it's a face that's streaked with tears. Jesus responded to his friend's death by crying. Jesus wept, shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus responded to his own pain by throwing himself on the ground, crying out, God, if there is any other way, let this cup pass. And then through the process of working that through, he came to the conclusion, not my will, but yours be done. That's a pattern that we Christians can look to. It's okay to cry out. It's okay to hurt. It's okay to say, I wish there was another way. Jesus himself did. But once the pain happens, my focus is more toward, now that it's happened, How should I respond? What possible good could come out of this situation?
In the book, The Question That Never Goes Away, you talk a lot about moving from cause to response, and we'll pick that up in just a moment and talk more about that, and also the role of community in recovery and the idea of redemption and renewal. We'll get to that as we continue our conversation with Philip Yancey. He's written a new book called The Question That Never Goes Away, and it's a response to his opportunities to speak as people want to know, Where Is God When It Hurts?, one of his first best-selling books. He's written some 25 books. We're talking with Philip today, who serves as editor-at-large for Christianity Today magazine, and prolific writer and a great thinker. One of his books is called Prayer, Does It Make a Difference? We'll get into that a little bit as well. What is the role of prayer in the midst of our suffering? And we do have some copies of that to give away. You're welcome to join the broadcast or at least sign up for that. We'll do a little drawing coming up here at the end of the hour. 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. Talking with Philip Yancey today, there's more to come here on Connecting Faith. Pick up a copy or download a copy of Philip Yancey's latest book, The Question That Never Goes Away. You'll discover that that is a key point, that we are not alone. And we'll get to that discussion in a moment. Philip Yancey, editor-at-large for Christianity Today, has written some 25 books. Early on, he was writing important books like Disappointment with God and Where Is God When It Hurts? And he has written more recently issues that are central to our faith about, what's so amazing about grace, or the Jesus I never knew, or prayer, does it make any difference? And the new one we're referencing today, The Question That Never Goes Away, is Philip's had an opportunity to speak on the subject, Where Is God When It Hurts?, time and time again. And so we want to talk a little bit about it today, and our phone number for your part in the conversation is 877-93-FAITH. Philip, I do want to talk a little bit about the role of community in working through areas of recovery and suffering, because we bear this pain alone, and that's difficult unless we allow others in.
Absolutely. I should mention, Neil, you mentioned download, and actually for the next several months, you can only get this book through Amazon Kindle.
Okay.
You can go on my website, philipyancey.com, or Facebook site. But the real book, the hard copy book, will come out in December through Zondervan, but so many bad things were happening in the world, we didn't want to wait. So we're getting an advance edition out online only for those who have Kindle. Of course, you can get Kindle apps on a PC or even a phone or whatever where you can read it if you don't have the Kindle device itself. But right now it's only available online, The Question That Never Goes Away. But you're absolutely right. When we went to Newtown, the folks were a little nervous. They said, it's just a few days after Christmas, and these people have been saturated with the media, and we don't know if anybody's going to show up. In fact, there's supposed to be a blizzard here, and I hate to bring you all the way out here and only have a few people show up, but actually a lot of people showed up, 1,000 people each night, each time I spoke to the community at large. And that speaks for exactly what you mentioned. Pain is not something that you should try to bear alone. Sometimes you'll see an ad on television that'll say, "Do not practice this alone." You know,
yeah.
And I think pain is one of those things you should not practice alone. I've investigated prayer, and I'm sure you've seen surveys. Sometimes they'll do research projects, and they'll say, "Oh, prayer had this effect in helping someone to heal faster from a heart attack," and some people say, "No, it didn't really work." But one thing that is absolutely clear in every survey is that a person who is surrounded by a loving community, often a church, will heal better, will heal faster. And it makes so much sense, because if you're going through a hard time and it's just you and you've got nothing to think about but how bad off you are, it's just going to get worse and worse. But if you're connected with a community like my church, where there's a whole team that will call up and say, what meals do you need? Can we look after your kids, your dogs, your pets, whatever? Can we take you to the doctor? It disarms the enemies of recovery. The enemies of recovery are things like fear and stress and anxiety and guilt. And the church community is a beautiful place to just disarm those things so that you can use your resources, you can use the energy that you have to recover, to get well. And you do that so much better with people to lean on. And that's where community comes in. I've read all the research, and there's no doubt that a person involved in a church community will be able to handle tragedy, will be able to handle illness better than a person who's trying to fight it alone.
I want to talk a little bit more about that. One of the headings in your book is called Do No Harm, and I was just curious to know, is it just Christians who are kind of prone to do this, or does everybody say inappropriate things? And, of course, more importantly, how do we stop saying inappropriate things?
Well, we do. Of course, that was taken from the Hippocratic Oath. Doctors say do no harm, but we all know that sometimes they do harm, you know, unintentionally, but you'll pick up an infection in a hospital or something. And Christians actually do a lot of harm by opening their mouth too soon. I have asked so many people, when you were going through this hard time, who helped? Not one time has somebody said, oh, it was a PhD in theology from this seminary. He had the wisest explanation of why things happen. Often they won't even say a pastor. They'll usually point to a grandmother, somebody with time on her hands who will just sit there and be a servant. And there's the old story of Job in the Old Testament. We always talk about Job's comforters in kind of a pejorative way because they weren't very helpful. But if you read the story carefully, when they came, they were so upset by what had happened to Job. They tore their clothes, sat down beside him for 7 days and seven nights before they said a word. That was actually the time when they were most helpful to him. It's when they opened their mouth that the problem started. And in the book, I outline some of the things we say well-intentioned, because we want to say something. So people will say, well, if just one person comes to Christ as a result of this funeral, it'll all be worth it. Or you say to a little child, you know, or a parent who lost a child, God wanted your child more than you did. Well, those things, they may be well-intentioned. There may be a little element of truth, but they hurt. And often it's because the timing is bad. Right after someone is going through tragedy is not the time to step back and give these concepts to deal with the theology. Mainly, they need love. They need support. They need concern. And so my advice to Christians, how can I help, is keep your mouth shut and see what needs doing that can actually practically get them through these few days.
Good advice from Phil Yancey. Philip, we'll take a couple of calls here quickly. Just some people want to say thanks. Peter in Barnum is on line one. Peter, go ahead. You're on with Philip Yancey.
Yes, I wanted to thank Phil. I read Where's God When It Hurts back in 2008 after I was made homeless at the hands of some 20-year church friends that defrauded me out of everything I owned. And,
oh, my.
And I'll tell you what. It was a big help. I ended up doing some volunteer work for a Baptist church, and it's probably the only thing that held me together. And that's where I found a copy of that book on the shelf, and I pretty much devoured it because I needed it so badly. And then the other thing I just wanted to add after listening to your last few minutes here is the only people that were available to help me in a completely broken situation were retired people who had the time. And without them, I would not even be standing here today.
Huh.
I just read Ron Hutchcraft's 12 sentences regarding the young people today, and it broke my heart. Then I think about all the retired Americans that are available that could be helping. It's just we've got to get back to helping one another.
Good word, Peter. Thank you for sharing your story.
Yes, Peter mentions, I'm glad he brought up those things, a couple of things that come out. One is his pain was not illness. It wasn't tragedy. It was more psychological pain, the way he was hurt by other people, losing a job. And, of course, a lot of people in the last few years have been going through versions of that with the economic downturn we've had. And the other thing is that he found comfort, he found some healing by serving others. A couple of weeks ago, Time magazine did a cover story on returning servicemen who are going through post-traumatic shock. And one of the best things for them is to serve, to help others. And in fact, the editor of the magazine makes this kind of offhand comment because he notices so many Christian agencies, you know, Habitat for Humanity and the Salvation Army, who are involved helping after a tornado or a hurricane. And he just makes the offhand comment that you don't see too many secular humanists handing out meals at a place like this. And then he goes on to say, the very act of volunteering, the very act of serving is a healing thing. And boy, that's a Christian concept from at the very beginning, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where Jesus says we serve others, and he shows them by washing the feet of his disciples. This is what we do, not by lording it over them, but by serving. And in the very process of serving, of giving away your life, you find your life. And Time magazine said that's what's happening with these wounded warriors. When they come back, they find a place to serve, and in the very process of doing it, they find healing.
I thought the best part of Peter's comment was that, you know, thank God for those old Baptist church libraries that still have copies of your book around. But that
hey,
was,
I like that.
It's 42 past the hour. Let's take a call. Patty, a word of thanks to Philip. Patty, you're on with Phil Yancey. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Back in 87, I lost my sister. After a year of struggle with cancer, I took care of her a good bit at that time. And her church in Florida, before we moved her home, and my little fellowship group back in Iowa were a tremendous support to her and to my all of us, my family. I just couldn't say enough about what they did. But after it was all over, your books on disappointment with God and where is God when it hurts really helped get me through that time, because I, you know, when people are praying, you see sometimes God answers someone's prayer and someone is healed, and so many were praying for her, and it was hard to understand why she wasn't healed, but
right.
Anyway, that was a big help to me.
Yeah.
And I just really appreciate it.
Patty, glad to have you listening. Thanks for calling and for sharing that. Philip, talk a little bit about, you know, that the issue of unanswered prayer. And you address that in your book, Prayer Doesn't Make Any Difference.
Yeah, several chapters on that. And there's the why question. Patty, I'm delighted that your sister did have that community around you, around her and around you as well. And I also want to say a word for the caregivers. You were a caregiver for your sister. And that's an unheralded thing. We don't really hold them up in the spotlight very often. But boy, that is doing the will of God at the grassroots level, right on the front lines. And I thank you for that. Unanswered prayer. I've learned that miracles are not ordinaries. I rejoice when they happen. I don't count on them. Every death, in a sense, is an unanswered prayer, because usually there are people praying that the death not take place. So we live on a planet that's full of tragedy, that's full of things that don't work out like we want them to work out. And I guess I would say they don't work out like God wants them to work out. I don't talk so much about God's will anymore. I know you get in trouble when you do that with these theologians. I talk about God's desire. And I know clearly God's desire is for our wholeness. God's desire is a planet of peace, not war. And God has promised to accomplish that someday. And one of the ways in which he's accomplishing that is by turning his church loose to plant the kingdom of God, which will one day encompass all of creation. It's not a plan that is easy to understand, and it's not an instant plan, and it's a plan that includes a lot of confusing things. But as a Christian, I have deep hope that God will indeed accomplish that someday.
There's a line in the book, the question that never goes away, that I wrote down. You were You talk about the wealth of lament and protest in the Old Testament makes clear that we cannot count on God to intercede directly in human history, no matter how monstrous the injustice. And as I read that, I thought, you know, that's not really uplifting or encouraging. But expand a little more on that, Philip.
Well, the encouraging part is you can say anything you want to God. And if you doubt that, just read the Psalms. Eugene Peterson, who did the paraphrase, the Message, calculates that about two-thirds of the Psalms are Psalms of lament. And that's a fancy way of saying, the psalmist is saying, God, I don't like the way you're running the world. And Job, too, the book of Job, is a book of prayers. Job crying out to God, I don't like this. I don't like what's happening here. You need to do something about it. Now, we believe that God will do something about it. It's not the instant conclusion that we want to happen right now. But God will, God promises, and God has shown us a good image of what that world will look like by sending his son to show us in person what he will do for creation as a whole.
In a moment, we're going to talk about redeeming and being redeemed. We'll get some great insight just ahead from Philip Yancey, who has authored 25 books, many of them more than a dozen Gold Medallion Award-winning books that have been published in the millions of print. The one we're referencing is called The Question That Never Goes Away. It has just come out available as a Kindle book, and will be coming out here in the next few months in a hardback from Zondervan. We've got some copies of his book, Prayer, Does It Make Any Difference? And we'll talk more with Philip Yancey in just a moment here on Connecting Faith.
This is Wayne Peterson, president of HCJB Global, with Beyond the Call. In 2011, a 6.3 magnitude earthquake rocked the New Zealand city where Craig and Rebecca lived. 180 people died. Many more were displaced from their homes. With their own home and community damaged, Craig and Rebecca suddenly realized what it was like to live without basic necessities like clean water. Many people had to count on water tanker trucks to give them clean water every day. Through this experience, God opened their eyes to people in Asia who every day struggle to find clean water sources. Even in the midst of their own chaotic situation, they sponsored a clean water well in India. And then after some time, they even sponsored a second one. Consider looking outside your own immediate needs to those who really need help. Go beyond the call. And then visit us online at hcjb.org.
It's 49 past the hour, and happy to spend some time today with Philip Yancey, editor-at-large for Christianity Today magazine and best-selling author, some 25 books. One of his earliest books was Where Is God When It Hurts? Also wrote Disappointment with God, and he sort of reflected on that as a result of having opportunities to speak in many cases in times and situations on that very subject and passing along some lessons he learned from the land of suffering in a new book called The Question That Never Goes Away. And in that book, Philip, you quote the Dallas Willard, the late Dallas Willard, who suggested that nothing irredeemable has happened to us or can happen to us. Talk about the idea of redeeming the pain and suffering.
I sure will. That phrase from Dallas Willard, for me, summarizes the whole chapter of Romans 8. Romans 8 is very clear that the whole creation is groaning. A lot of bad things are happening. And then there's that verse in the middle of it, Romans 8:28, that says, for those who love God, it doesn't say only good things will happen, but nothing will happen that God cannot use for good. And that's what Dallas Willard is saying, that God can take no matter what happens and somehow wrest good out of it. That phrase, redeemed, I learned a lot about that phrase from Gerald Sitzer. I don't know if you know that name. Probably do, Neil.
Yeah, we had him on not too long ago, actually.
Okay, so, yeah. Well, he wrote a book about 20 years ago called A Grace Revealed about this terrible tragedy in his family where he lost three generations at once, a daughter, a wife, and a mother in a car accident. Drunk driver hit their car, and he's out in the middle of the of the wilderness and actually held each one as they died. And he wrote a beautiful book called A Grace Disguised. Recently, and that's probably what you were talking to him about, he wrote a follow-up book called A Grace Revealed, 20-year retrospective. And he talks about that word redeemed. He said most of the words that start with a re look backwards. So we rehab a house, we restore something, we revisit an old place. He said the word redeem looks forward. It doesn't erase the past. The scars are still there. But it looks forward to what good can be made out of it. Maybe a more modern word would be recycle. So I take my old computer down and I give it to a recycling company and they take it apart. They take all the little rare earths and the gold and the electronic things and make them into something new, something that's more current, that works with modern programs. And that's the promise that we have as Christians, not that the old thing is worthless, but that no matter what it is, and Paul was so clear about the things in his life, God can take those things and recycle them, make them into something new, make them even into something better. As a journalist, I've seen that happen again and again. You just had a good example of that on the advertisement in between, where we talked about this couple in New Zealand who went through this tragedy in Christchurch, and they redeemed that suffering because it awakened them to the fact that there are a lot of people in the world who don't have clean water. And so they went out and started a ministry to bring clean water to people who don't have it. And that is a beautiful example of what we Christians should be doing, can be doing. Another example, I'm sure you've had Johnny Erickson Tata on your program at some point. And here's a person who, when the accident happened, she was just distraught. I interviewed her. She was 19 years old, and she couldn't imagine the rest of her life. Here she was planning to be in the Olympics. She was an athlete. Now she couldn't even blow her nose. She couldn't even wipe her tears. And I remember interviewing her, and she's just crying and saying, I can't imagine how I'm going to go on with life. Years later, right after she had turned 50, which is pretty old, actually, for someone in her condition, she's done very well, she turned to me and said, that was the best day of my life because God redeemed it. He took the worst thing and made it into the best thing. Because I would have just been a spoiled suburban housewife with an SUV and two kids and a dog and nothing to live for. And now I've had a calling. I can call the church back to care for people like me. And she's done incredible work all over the world. That's a beautiful example, again, of redeeming. And, of course, the very best example we have is the cross of Jesus, because it looked like the worst thing that could possibly happen here. God sends his son, never did anything wrong, and then he's crucified, he's killed. And yet we look back on the day, and we don't call it sad Friday, tragic Friday, dark Friday. We call it Good Friday, because God took that event and turned it into the redemption of the entire world. And not only that, he showed us what he's going to do with the world a few days later on Easter Sunday. So I love that word, redemption. If I can get across one thing, it would be that word, because that's the hope that we have as Christians.
I was thinking about, as I was reading your book, the verse in Romans 9 came to mind. Who are you to talk back to God? Shall what is formed say the one who formed it? Why did you make me thus? I was thinking about, the suffering, the pain that we go through. And then the quote from Tozer came to mind. What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. That we need to think more clearly about God in with right thinking, don't we?
Mm. Yes, we do. And I would encourage people again, draw your image of God from Jesus. He's the express image of the invisible God. He's a way that we can grasp God, which we can't possibly do. But we have a perfect representation, a perfect image. There's a phrase from one of the old British archbishops who says, in God there is no un-Christ-likeness at all, which is just a fancy way of saying, if you want to know what God is like, look at Jesus. And that's why I encourage people when something bad happens, instead of trying to imagine the one running the universe, just what would Jesus say? What would Jesus think? How does Jesus feel about something like that? And it's a much more graspable and visual representation of the comfort that we need.
Philip, before our time is gone, I'm just curious. I mean, you've had these invitations to speak places like Japan after the tsunami, Sarajevo, Newtown. I mean, I would think that those invitations are a little daunting. How do you sort of maybe deal with those feelings of inadequacy? And I mean, is it the same message all the time? What can we say? What do you say?
Well, it is daunting, you're right. And yet I would have to say, when I look out on those audiences, and I've been like at Virginia Tech, I was in Mumbai the night of the terrorist bombings there, and you never see an audience more desperate for comfort. I mentioned that they remind me of little birds with their mouths open. Please give us some food, give us some food. We're starving, we're dying. And it's a holy task, really, that I've been called to. I don't take it lightly. My wife was a hospice chaplain for years, and I've learned so much from her. And I just work very carefully to bring words of comfort and healing and hope. And as Christians, we can do that. Not everybody can do that, but we can do that. And I try to disarm some of the do-no-harm things, you know, that people do, and cut around them and just get right back to the core that God is on your side. God is not against you. God is on the side of the sufferer. And our job as Christians, as Paul spells out in 2 Corinthians 1 so clearly, is to bring the comfort that we have received and spread it abroad to others who are in need of that comfort. And we do have that comfort to offer. And, you know, it's not something I enjoy or look forward to, but it's something that has emboldened my own faith over the years. I wrote that first book, Where Is God When It Hurts, when I was 27 years old. And it was because that was my question. I wanted to find answers. Well, I've learned a few things over the years. Dr. Paul Brand, who I wrote with, was so important in that. And now that I have gray hair, I can go and like Dr. Brand did to me, give perspective, hopefully, to some other people.
Well, you've given us some wonderful perspective today. Philip, thank you so much for your writing and for speaking with us today, because it has been a rich hour, and if I hope that it will be a prompt for some people to just maybe go check out their church libraries or go online at the very least and download the Kindle book, The Question That Never Goes Away, the latest from Philip, and that will be coming out in hardback here in a few months. Philip, blessings to you. Thanks so much for sharing with us today.
I appreciate it, Neil. I hope I never have to speak on that topic again, but I imagine I will.
Well, thank you for the perspective you've offered us today. And let me just mention again, Philip Yancey, who has written some 25 books, many of them award-winning books with millions in print. Disappointment with God, Where Is God When It Hurts, What's So Amazing About Grace, Prayer Doesn't Make Any Difference. I recommend all those to you. The Question That Never Goes Away, the latest, available on Kindle, or you can find out more about his writings on his website, philipyancey.com. And if you want to pass this on to a friend, you can get the podcast online at myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith.